Hey everyone, welcome back to Raptors Room. So we're here with our much promised episode where we want to talk about the Masai incident, look back on that and kind of unpack that incident, and then talk a little bit more about how that relates to some issues that we see in Canada as well. Both David and I were talking about this episode, and we thought, you know, we really didn't want to do this episode without having our good friend Jordan on with us. So thankfully he's a popular, busy guy, of course, hard to get a hold of, but we managed to lock him in for today. So hey Jordan, how's it going?
I'm doing good. I'm really not in demand at all. Just was lucky to be on vacation.
He's humble too, folks.
Yeah, and let me just also say that we've had like a 50-minute sound check to try and get these three microphones to work together. I still don't know, as we are finally recording, if we figured it out. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But
it's a very good point, and we apologizing ahead of time if all the audio is messed up and weird, but hopefully it's sufficient enough that you guys can actually
hear it. You made it 1 minute and 26 seconds before apologizing.
I apologize.
Like, no apologies.
We started, I won't apologize.
No.
It's so one commitment we made to each other.
No, you're right. You're right. No apologies here. No apologies. We're the Raptors Room. We're awesome. Yeah. But yeah, we're super excited to have Jordan on with us to talk about this stuff. And I know, like, it's been a few months since, you know, the Raps have won the title. Again, folks, don't forget
It's been a couple months that we've been the defending champs, is what you mean.
Yeah, we've been the defending champs, you know, continue to live in that glory. And it's awesome to live in that glory, and it's awesome to feel the glow and to celebrate the Toronto Raptors and the city winning the championship. You know, David and I are both, you know, you know, our listeners know all too well, David and I love Toronto. We vouch for Toronto and in Canada in general. We love the city and the country. And so we definitely still, because of that, I think, are also a little bit susceptible to what we'll be talking about this episode, where, you know, we kind of glorify Canada and Toronto and multiculturalism, and sometimes forget and kind of gloss over the fact that Canada you know, has problems with racism and institutional racism. And so before we get to that, I want to kind of start with the Masai incident and the coverage that came out of that.
Yeah. And just to add to that, the kind of the kernel of this episode was very much, you and I were both thinking about the way the Masai coverage had kind of played out and our frustrations with that. And then while the celebration was actually going on in Toronto, I think Jordan messaged us and like was just sort of reflecting in the moment on sort of both the joy and the excitement of the celebration, and also the way that the narratives around that were kind of obscuring exactly the things that we had been frustrated by, which is what we wanted to do this episode about. So that's our way in here, and I'll let Andrew set it up.
Yeah, so I mean, we are a few months removed from the Masai incident, so I thought I would take a few minutes here to kind of recap and refresh everyone on the event and the coverage that subsequently followed, and kind of give everyone a refresher about what happened there. You know, I think most of our listeners probably know all too well now that Masai, you know, when the buzzer hit and the Raptors won the championship and became the new NBA champions, Masai Ujiri, the Raptors general manager, president, you know, he obviously immediately rushed onto the court to celebrate with his team, this team that he constructed, the team that he is, you know, as we keep saying, the true MVP of, and really the one of the most deserving, you know, winners of this championship, this trophy. And as he was trying to get on the court, he was immediately stopped and essentially carted for all intents and purposes. So, I mean, if you look at the headlines that came out of that, you know, there was an altercation allegedly, and if you just saw headlines, you would think that Masai essentially drop kicked some sheriff on the court. I mean, some of the initial headlines were just insane. Like, basically, all of them from not just the American media, but even, you know, Canadian media, like the Globe and Mail and Maclean's, had headlines that essentially said something to the effect of, you know, Masai Ujiri accused of assaulting a sheriff's deputy. And right off the bat, we're all just sitting here going, what? And then as you dig deeper and as more, you know, pieces of information came out and eyewitness reports came out, they clearly told a very different story. So to begin, first of all, you know, the initial reports only would quote the reports from the sheriff's department from Alameda County, where the sheriff's deputy was from. They would talk about how Masai had a physical altercation where he essentially threw fists with two fists, is the quote that I'm seeing, shoved the sheriff's deputy and hit him on the jaw, gave him allegedly a concussion. And all the sheriff's deputy did, all the poor sheriff's deputy did, was ask Masai for his credentials in order to let him on the court. But then as eyewitness reports came out that clearly denied the extent of the altercation, you know, some eyewitness reports were saying that Masai Ujiri, in fact, did have credentials. And that was clearly backed up by video footage that we saw that came out when Masai was walking through the tunnel to get onto the court. He had credentials in his hand. And when once that video came out, the reports from the sheriff's department were quickly altered conveniently to say, oh, he just didn't have the quote unquote right credentials, whatever that means. Now, everyone keep in mind that Masai Ujiri is the president of the Toronto Raptors organization, one of two teams that was playing in the NBA championship. If it's the sheriff deputy, if it's the sheriff deputy's job to keep the right people on and off the court, you would think he would know who the general manager of one of the two teams was playing. But I mean, if you read the articles, apparently that he didn't need to know. He was just asking for credentials. And some of the quotes coming from the sheriff's department were quite funny. I'd like to just read one of them. When it got revealed that he had credentials, the sergeant says that Mr. Ujiri presented his documents in a very threatening way directly in the officer's face. So
he had the credentials.
He had the credentials, but David, he was revealing them in a very threatening way.
Like, sure, as you do, know, yeah.
You know, paper cuts from that on the face, you know, you want to steer clear of that. And then when people started asking, okay, like if there was a, you know, injury to the face, the body cam footage should clearly show that. Can we see the body cam footage? And then a few days later, reports were then again amended to say that actually the police said the body cam switched off the instant Mr. Ujiri made contact. That is the quote. The body cam switched off the instant Mr. Ujiri made contact. Now, you might think that obviously that's ridiculous, but this is a line that I think is frequently used by police departments during these altercations where they say, oh, there was a body cam because it's required, but the body cam is conveniently turned off when there's something that potentially would be damning to the police officer.
Yeah.
So we saw that again here in this situation. Again, you know, you have to look at some background here. You know, it was also reported afterwards by some that were talking about how the Alameda County Police has a history of rubbing shoulders with white supremacist groups and racist groups. And so, despite all this very clearly deceiving evidence and the background of the sheriff's department in Alameda County, the first thing that we want to highlight here is just the immediate reactions from the media, and all the headlines that came out were immediately reporting purely what was coming out from the sheriff's department, that Masai Ujiri assaulted the sheriff's deputy, that they were going to press charges, that they were going to sue, and not really investigating it any further, not looking into the background, not asking questions about the footage, about the background of Alameda County, about, you know, eyewitness accounts from people in the front row talking about how what they saw is very different. Talking about how Leo Routens, who is a reporter for Sportsnet, he said that when the Raptors immediately won the championship, he immediately went onto the court, was not stopped or asked for ID by anyone.
Yeah.
And yet, and he's just a member of the media. And yet, Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball operations for the Toronto Raptors, again, one of two teams that is playing in this game, was stopped and effectively carded as he tried to go and celebrate with his team.
Well, Leo Routens couldn't threateningly present his credentials presented them at all.
Right.
So he outthought the sheriff on that one.
Right. Exactly. So, so that's a quick refresher, I think, of that incident. But I think, you know, I think there's been a lot of reporting on that, and I think there have been some good reporting that have called out the immediate reactions. Mm-hmm. And I think I will be able to link a couple articles that we liked in the description of this episode. But we also noticed that some of the reaction from the Canadian side was a bit too cute, let's just say. There was a lot of talk from Canadian reporting that was basically saying to the effect of, oh, there they go again, those crazy Americans. They're so racist. Ha ha. Good thing we're in Canada. Good thing the Raptors are Canada's team. We're so multicultural. We've defeated racism. And a lot of, I think I'd like to call it, essentially, it's a form of Canadian elitism, a form of, and we frequently do this, where we look at our neighbors to the south, see the shit show that it rightfully is, and say, oh, well, we're not that bad, so therefore we don't need to fix anything, as if we don't have problems north of the border. And, you know, the reason why it's important to call this stuff out is, as long as we pretend like everything is good, things like racism and white supremacism that continues to happen north, on our side of the border, will just flourish while it's unchecked, whether it's in just pockets of Canada, whether it's in police departments across the country not being held accountable for some of their incidents against minorities in the country. So we want to make sure that, you know, as a podcast that primarily focuses on sports, we are also very proud of being, you know, Toronto Raptor fans and you know, residents of Canada. But we, although we are prideful, we also want to make sure that we call out problems that we know all too well exist here. And so that's why we want to bring Jordan, and I know David as well, who, you know, is, you know, has a lot of experience dealing with this stuff in Jacksonville, but in his time when he was living up here, he's also had experience with this. So I'm hoping the two of you can together, you know, join me in this conversation where we talk about that. So I don't know. I think that was a good recap.
Yeah,
I don't know, David, Jordan, well, you guys want to take it over?
Well, you covered a lot there. I think that summarizes it nicely. The kind of key things that emerged there are that there was Canadian press like complicity in pushing the police officer's narrative and framing it in a way that sort of maybe exploited stereotypes in a really like disgusting way. And that took a while. There was a long delay before that got corrected, and we actually heard some other like eyewitness accounts. But then in addition to that, you had this reaction among like the Canadian fan base, maybe, that sort of used it as an occasion to point to how the US is worse than Canada, and thank God that it's possible to play in Canada now in the NBA with the Raptors. And then there was this other dimension where we, you and I, and Jordan too, from our previous discussion with him, that we were enjoying this ride a lot too, and we didn't want to dwell necessarily on how some of this myth-making and narrative building was problematic and getting in the way of our ability to like think through these things in a critical way. And I think nothing kind of like underscored that more than just by the fact that what Masai experienced was police racial profiling or carding, and that somehow, as transparent as that was within a few days of the incident, the Canadian media did not pick up and suss out that that is like a major source of controversy and struggle for communities of color in Canada, the practice of carding itself, which has been like widespread for decades. And it, technically, I think they banned it in Ontario in 2017, I believe, but nobody really, none of the community groups are convinced that the practice has actually been curbed in any meaningful way. And so just the fact that we could have all this happen in this kind of a transparent way and not actually have like a national conversation about police accountability and brutality in Toronto itself or in Canada itself really put us in a tough spot, I think, as fans of the Raptors and as people who were very keen to enjoy in the celebration.
Absolutely. And I think I actually want us to start there with the failure on the side of the Canadian media to really talk about this issue at all and pretend essentially like it doesn't exist in Canada. And for that, I think I want Jordan, like when we were talking earlier, you talked about a particularly disgusting incident where essentially it wasn't reported on, you said, for a while. So I don't know, Jordan, if you want to talk about that and sure. That incident. Well, there.
So, I mean, that's a few different things going on. And I mean, the media is involved in both of them. I think, I mean, the main thing is the way that media reports in the first case is always this, we got to make deadline or whatever. Like they're using one report from the Associated yeah. Press, and that's all the information they have. And there's no time to like do any fact checking or whatever. Like that's pretty terrible. But this other story, case of DeFonte Miller, who's a black man, in 2016, late December, in Whitby. He was 19, walking alone or with his own brother as well. And these two guys came up at night. One who happens to be a police officer, Michael Tarot, and his brother, Christian. The police officer is Michael. And they were asking DeFonte what he's doing in the area, blah, blah, blah. They just started following him around. He tried to leave, and they chased him. All of this is allegedly, because it's before the courts right now. Anyway, so he was hit, allegedly, with a metal pipe in the face. His eye was so badly damaged, it was removed in surgery, broken nose, jaw, like just a vicious beating. But we didn't even find out about this, the public, until July 2017. So the six months,
so that's, yeah.
of the story basically being buried. This is not necessarily the media's fault so much as the police, of course, being very careful with what they release to the public and what they don't, and the sort of the stories that the police tell about incidents like this. And they try to cover it up, well, allegedly, as much as possible. I'm just going to keep saying that so we don't get sued.
Yeah.
by saying allegedly, I'm just trying to cover the base of like all of this. Yeah, has to be proven in court. And most of it probably won't be. Because it's this court case, anyways, is about the actual beating, and it's not yeah. about how the police services covered it up. But the police services themselves aren't doing a lot on investigating themselves. This has been a big issue. Desmond Cole has been tweeting and writing some stuff about it. I can't remember where. Just follow him on Twitter.
Yeah. Desmond Cole is a good follow for those who are interested in learning more. I think he's pretty good. He's one of the few who are good at really covering this stuff. And I find one of the few. So yeah, he's a good follow.
And with carding, Desmond Cole was one of the people who really brought it to the forefront in the media. For those who weren't paying attention maybe to what he was talking about on Twitter, he had a big article. We should look it up. But it's in Maclean's or The Star or some other big big publication was like a cover story about carding and the issue. And it was a big part of why the move.
I think it was in like, wasn't it like in the Toronto Life?
Oh, that's probably like that. What it was. Yeah, there's too many too many things in Toronto in the names.
There's too many of them.
But that led to carding getting banned or whatever in Ontario, even though as a practice it still happens, just not officially.
Well, and isn't Cole also, after these kind of breakthrough reports, he kind of had this prominent role at the Star, and then didn't, maybe it was, I can't remember the exact history of it, but didn't he get some like direct pressure from his like editorial board or whatever to like tone it down a little bit?
Yeah, basically,
or, like,
he was
be less, participate in fewer direct actions or whatever.
Yeah, they're saying he was being too controversial and too activist was the word. Even though that's pretty much well within the Toronto Star's own like guidelines, like he wasn't really breaking them. Lots of other people have been activists or done that sort of work while still being journalists. Of course, they were white. Maybe that's the difference. I don't know. Because he's had these big articles, I guess he maybe attracts more, I don't know, nasty emails and whatever that the Star decided they didn't want to put up with it anymore, which is great dedication to your journalists. That's just a quick, easy example of like cops and media, like they're not telling the full story if they don't have to.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't just accept the first thing they say, no matter the department, no matter the country that that department is in or the province.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, especially, you know, more liberal, left-leaning, people of Canada are aware that, the police can be biased, but most of the time when they think police bias, they think of this happening in the States, and they don't really think of it happening here on our side. I think another important story that came up, and that's in one of the articles that we linked here, David, that you sent me, was this incident that happened on UOttawa's campus the day that this Maasai incident happened, actually. Could you refresh me on that? Like something about he was essentially carded while on campus.
I don't have that exact article in front of me anymore because I had to change computers. But that was the piece in the, I think, The Conversation, it's called. And it was a professor there who basically just sort of used kind of the reaction, studied the reaction to the Maasai incident, and just drew attention to the fact that the same day we were kind of pointing the finger at the U.S. police for this kind of thing happening, that very same day that the incident took place, the same thing happened on campus at the University of Ottawa to a black, I don't know if it was a black student or a black member of the faculty, but they...
It was a black student, I think.
He didn't have his ID on him. So, I mean, in other words, he was carded. And just because he didn't have his ID, he ended up being like thrown on the floor. Thrown on the ground, rather, and I think there's actually video footage of his like cell phone tumbling to the ground, and I don't unfortunately have that article right in front of me to get a full description of what happened, but the point was pretty well made that this is exactly kind of the problem with our inability, because we have this mythology built up about Canada being so discreet or distinct from the States, and not having these problems with race or police brutality or systemic racism, that because we have that mythology, then we can't even see that when the two exact same incidents happen in the US and in Canada simultaneously, that suggests that maybe we shouldn't have a kind of like a superior attitude. You called it elitism, but like basically there's just this failure on the part of Canada that I think is largely born of this mythology or mythologizing about Canada's identity as a country that just stops us from even being able to broach the subject sometimes. And we have a mutual friend, I won't name him, but he often talks about this. But like when he came to Canada, the biggest thing he ran into was like racism in Canada. And then whenever you actually try to raise the issue, so many Canadians are convinced that, well, it's Canada, we're not racist here. You're thinking of the States. And like, yeah, you can't even have the discussion with your friends or your peers or the people around you. And you just kind of, I don't know if he used the term, but the way he would describe his experience, it was like almost like he'd be like gaslit, that like this racism that he was detecting in Canada, like he must be mistaken, or he's not understanding what's going on, that we're actually this liberal progressive country that doesn't do that stuff. And so I think that's the second part or second piece of this conversation, is the ways in which the way we talked about Toronto and Canada during the Toronto Raptors Toronto, I almost called them the Maple Leafs, which is
they were in the playoffs for a little bit.
Gross.
But not much of a run.
Yeah, but they'll never win a title. The way the Raptors were discussed and the way Masai was discussed, like there was all this beaming pride about having Masai, who's like the first African, he's from Nigeria, the first sort of non-American and non-white executive at least of that stature in the league. And he was like, you know, he's our guy in Toronto. And there was all this stuff that just kind of was coming out. And in other words, the Raptors title run itself became kind of a sight for obscuring just these things that were happening simultaneously to the carding incident with Masai.
Yeah, and I think it's important to still note that like we can be proud of that stuff, and we can be proud of our multiculturalism while still being fully aware that we haven't fixed the problem. We haven't gotten rid of it, right? And that this stuff still happens, as Jordan said, with that just absolutely terrible story of Defonte Miller with the carding incident in Ottawa. And this happens on many occasions, and a lot of the time people here can kind of turn a blind eye to it because they think that Canada has this mystical multiculturalism that has fixed everything.
I think part of this, it's not just Canadian elitism or whatever, which is how we try to get ourselves to sound like, oh, we're better than the States, that's sort of elite, we're above them, we're better. But it's a Canadian exceptionalism, that we're the exception to the rule of what's the terrible things that happened down there. And but then we try to make each of these incidents also an exception. So we've told, I don't know, one story or whatever, and that can be passed off as, oh, that's just an exception to the rule. Mostly, you know, Canadian police are great, and you know, they don't ever do anything bad when they're off duty. And obviously that's not the case. This is happening all the time, and it's not just at the level of official police. It's also at the level of like anybody. Well, I mean, that's a security guard story, is the U Ottawa, right? That's, and we have security guards at, I feel like in Toronto, actually, more security guards than I've ever really encountered anywhere else in my life. There's security in every, I mean, this is just part of moving to a city, and I grew up a hick, so whatever. But you know, there's security in every building, every condo building, every apartment building. There's security in every mall, like multiple security. And then even within the mall, you have each individual store has its own security. And all these jobs are looking out for people who don't belong, shouldn't be there, right? It's the same job. The TTC, Toronto Transit Commission, you know, our public transit, we have fare inspectors. GO Transit has fare inspectors, although I just saw they had a funny name on the back. It's like fare enforcers or something like
yeah, and that's actually, so Desmond Cole, I think, and yeah, I think he frequently reports on the fare inspectors, the TTC, and how they very disproportionately are requesting fare, proof of fare from basically people of color. And yeah, so absolutely. Like, I think Jordan's point that he's trying to make is that, like, okay, sure, we don't have, we've banned carding for police, but you know, this stuff doesn't stop, end at the police, right? We have all sorts of levels of institution and infrastructure that are supposed to be, you know, protecting everyone, but end up oftentimes having, you know, tinges of racism seep in, and then having minorities essentially being targeted disproportionately. Now, we're not saying obviously that this happens across the board, but it does happen, and it's important to call it out for what it is. That just because we're in Canada, we are not, as Jordan says, exceptional. That we see this throughout the country, and it's important to be able to have this kind of conversation. I think David's point from earlier that he was trying to make was, that our mutual friend, who every time he tries to bring this up feels like he gets gaslit, because people are just immediately react to him with this negative tone, saying like, how could you accuse us of being racist? We're Canadians. We're so, look at all my multicultural friends that I have, right? And not understanding that he's making a broader statement about how our society is very much imperfect and very much is disproportionately favors white upper class residents and people here. And this extends also to the conversation, I think, that a lot of Canadians are hearing now in the news about immigration and how, you know, we're dealing with, you know, we hear a lot of immigration stories from the US, but that conversation happens in Canada equally. And you see it with this new disgusting party that was formed by Maxime Bernier that is essentially, I mean, I essentially a white nationalist party. I don't even know how else to say it, that their whole platform is centered around racism against immigrants and essentially using that as an answer to those who feel economically unstable. And you see that, like, we hear all about xenophobia in the States, but we also see it in Canada. And so I guess the broader point here is that this Canadian exceptionalism is something that we need to be aware of, and we need to call it out.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a common thread of both countries being white supremacist projects, and then that dovetails where, whether it be police or security, ultimately serving like property and capital, and when those two things meet, it falls, the brutality and the harassment and et cetera, falls disproportionately on Black people and people of color, and in Canada on Indigenous people. I can't speak to that as much in the States, but of course it's true historically as well.
I don't remember where I read this, but I think the key thing that, you know, people need to be aware when they celebrate multiculturalism is not separate the culture from the people who bring that culture, right? So we can celebrate multiculturalism, but if we have members of these cultures that are coming to Canada being persecuted and marginalized, be able to say, like, celebrate multiculturalism and be, you know, celebrate that and be accepting of that and claim that, you know, we're welcoming of all and we're welcoming of all these cultures, but then on the flip side, turn a blind eye to minorities within who are bringing these cultures being persecuted by the institutions that you're backing, that you're voting for. So I think that's key to, for, I think, fans of the team and fans of Canada and multiculturalism to be able to square within themselves that they don't have those two things separate in their head.
Yeah.
To not separate the culture and the people.
It was, right? It was very heartening on Parade Day when everyone booed Doug Ford. Like,
oh, hell yeah.
I feel like there was a level of insight, but on the other hand, they didn't boo Justin Trudeau. So I don't know. And he's somebody who's much more wrapped up with like Canadian mythology, than Doug Ford, obviously.
Yeah, like, and I think that's an interesting point that I sometimes think about in terms politically. Like, it's much easier to call out when these things are much more extreme, right? And so a carding incident or an incident like DeFonte Miller, I mean, I don't know this, but I'm conjecturing that now that this issue has been really brought to the forefront in the States, that it would have had much more coverage in the States potentially than it has gotten coverage in Canada. I mean, even Jordan mentioned that like the police hid it for 6 months, but even after it got reported 6 months later, we really did not hear much about it. Like, it did not get the spotlight that it deserved, given the fact that, you know, a policeman and his brother basically kicked the shit out of a unarmed black man who was doing nothing, right? Absolutely nothing. And I think in the States, they've, since this issue has been really called out because they've had such an extreme problem, it's been brought to the forefront of the conversation. But because we just kind of have this undertone in Canada, we've been unable to talk about it more openly. And so it's, I don't know, that's just more of a meta question to me of like, do we need things to get as bad as Doug Ford for us to be able to call this out? Like, I would hope not. And that's why I like having this conversation, that despite things may seemingly be, you know, relatively okay compared to our neighbors to the south, that there are these problems and we should not let them fester and get so bad that we have to have essentially a government full of reactionaries before we are saying, hey, wait a second, there's some racism here, you know? Yeah, I don't know. Jordan, I mean, Jordan, like, I know you're super plugged in with the bullshit of what's going on in the Conservative Party and their backings and that being potentially what we're going to be facing come November.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the issue with the kind of myth-making that we have in, like, Trudeau's Canada compared to, I don't know, a Doug Ford Canada or a Stephen Harper Canada before Trudeau, where, like, you know, the way that we do immigration here is actually not, I mean, it's a little bit different than on, like, the southern border of the U.S., but we still have deportations. We still have holding areas that are basically, you can be held in forever without being charged in. We do deportations. Yeah. Like, even just right now, there's another, it's a, you know, a guy, Abdul Ahi Elmi. Let's try that again. Abdullahi Elmi, who came to Canada as a refugee from Somalia when he was like 10. And then he was taken by child welfare when he was 13 from his mom. And whoever was in charge there didn't do any of the, like, immigration stuff for him. So he never became a Canadian citizen. And now the government's going to deport him to Somalia, where he, like, his family is gone. He doesn't speak the language. Has missed out on the culture because he's lived in Canada since he was 10. You know, like, Canada's doing that. And It's not just an isolated thing. Like, this happens, but it takes, you know, reporters to find these individual stories to tell. But you could find one of these stories probably every week if you wanted to.
Weren't you saying that the Canada Border Services gets a call every day from the Toronto police?
So that's like that. That's something different. Yeah. So if you follow on Twitter, at No One Is Illegal, they've been tweeting a bit about some of the stuff that they've been doing. And they put in a Freedom of Information request to, I can't remember who it was, if it was either Canadian Border Services Agency or Toronto Police Services. But anyways, they found out that Toronto police are calling border services at least once a day, but usually more than once a day, that upon suspicion, those are in quotes, upon suspicion that they're finding somebody who doesn't have their papers or something, you know, so they don't belong in Canada. And so, you know, like, what's... What are you going to stumble upon somebody in Toronto, a hugely populated city with tons of tourism and so on? Like, how are you going to look at somebody and say, yeah, they don't belong here. It's pretty clear what's going on for them to have some suspicion. And this is just a way that they can get away or around the carding stuff. It's not random. and it's not targeted, but it's just based on suspicion. And it's such a loose, flimsy word that...
I mean, it's entirely based on profiling, yeah. Right? And yeah, we talk about, like, we hear all the time now about the states and ICE and their raids and people calling, basically profiling, oftentimes Latin Americans claiming that they're illegal immigrants and then calling ICE on that. But we, like Jordan said, we have that here every day, at least once a day, right? So
yeah, and that's the Toronto police,
right,
yeah. Calling in. Right. I mean, there's also a lot of other reports of families, people saying, you know, that Canadian Border Services is, you know, showing up at their work or stopping them in the street and asking who they are, where they're from, those sorts of questions. And like, that's exactly the same. It's no different, except that, I don't know. Maybe they don't have as many bulletproof vests on, or they don't carry guns with as many bullets in them. But I'm sure they do. You know, like, what difference is it, a handgun compared to an assault rifle or something? Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think, like, there are a bunch of these stories, and it's good, I think, that we're highlighting, like, a few specifics here. But we encourage, you know... our listeners to do their own research and find out for themselves. And like we said, there are some good reporters out there, few, but there are some, and, you know, Desmond Cole is one, and we'll hopefully link a few more in the description for this podcast. Jordan, do you have any other recommendations?
Yeah. Well, there's that, you can include the McLean's article
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
By, Andre yeah. Domines. Yeah. He's good. This, I don't know. There's too many things and I didn't.
Yeah, I think you said the other handle was no one is illegal or something. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to think about all this stuff too in the context of the Raptors playoff run and the mythologizing that went on during that process, because we have seen black athletes, especially Colin Kaepernick, but an array of black athletes like get on board with this protest for police accountability and against systemic racism and criminal justice reform. And it's interesting to me that that connection wasn't made either when this was going on. Athletes have been kind of more responsive to what community groups are doing on the ground. A group like BLM, most prominently, but they've been very responsive to this. And then whenever you actually have an incident involving an NBA executive, the press just never makes the connection to something like what Colin Kaepernick was doing, taking a knee, and what maybe we should do now in response to not only this high profile incident of carding, but obviously the various examples that Jordan has helped walk us through. I think that not only are we trying to ask people to be skeptical and push back against some of the Canadian exceptionalism, but also to think about what athletes have done to push back against some of this stuff and stand with those athletes rather than... We have this tendency, I think, to identify with the powers that be, whether it be the police officer that was involved with the shooting, even the way I just said it, right? Like framing these things in ways that make the police officer sound like a passive participant in this crime. You know, that whole demonstration that we went through and all the reaction to it, the backlash, the Blue Lives Matter thing, all of that is very like relevant and present to the sports world right now. And this could have been a summer where we spent a lot of time thinking about how the leadership of athletes connects to, like, the leadership of Kyle Lowry, for example, whenever he had that incident with the fan who ended up being the part owner of the Warriors. And Lowry was, like, very, like, he expressed his outrage in, like, I thought very, like, incisive ways, like talking about class and talking about how and race and the way that those things function that allowed that incident to happen without like a harsher penalty. Like honestly, if it was a black fan, like just a kind of like a regular fan, not a part owner, doing that to like a, I don't know, Tom Brady or something at a game, like that person would be like, would have been like beaten and thrown in jail. So I don't know. There's an intersection there that prompted this discussion in the first place. And I think it's worth returning to ultimately as fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, this keeps getting brought up in throughout sports. And what we're trying to do here is like a lot of Canadian sports following is, you know, either it's hockey where, you know, we haven't talked about that, but there's all sorts of suspicious behavior that happens in that world. I don't know, David, if you want to talk about PK in Montreal, but
I honestly haven't really watched hockey since then. I remember that Montreal shipped PK Subban out. He was like a guy coming into his prime under contract and like an elite player in the league, and everybody like justifying the trade just like spoke in this like coded language about like his attitude and his behavior, and you know that it was too much about him. It was like, you know, like who does Felix with Chapo always does the like he was like a hip-hop style player is like the way they were describing basically, which, you know, obviously just like a very racist response. Yeah. It's a constant factor in sports and Canada. Remember there was that TSN broadcast and that one commentator was criticizing PK Subban, and he had this like Freudian slip or something where he described PK Subban as not playing. He was saying, he was like, he plays the wrong way and he needs to learn to play like the white way. He meant to say the right way, I think PK Subban was a particularly challenging figure for a lot of like hockey fans, a lot of white hockey fans. And I think that was very relevant in why they would trade such a talent under contract in his prime.
Yeah. Didn't they claim that he wasn't meshing well with the coach, and then the next year they fired the coach?
Yeah.
Did that happen?
It was all this nonsense. I mean, they've been bad. I think they're starting to turn a corner from what I understand, but they've been bad since that trade. Which has been the first time I've ever cheered against the Montreal Canadiens, but
yeah. As I actually quickly, because you briefly brought it up, and I would be remiss. We were talking about, you know, people and organizations to follow who cover these kinds of issues in Canada. I would be remiss if I did not bring up Black Lives Matter, their chapter in Toronto, which is actually a pretty sizable organization, if I understand correctly, and they. Do some great work in calling that stuff out here in Toronto. And I think they organize across the country.
They famously, the Toronto chapter famously protested the Pride, right? I can't remember if it was World Pride or just one of the major, I guess it wasn't World Pride. It was the year after World Pride, but they famously like did a demonstration in the midst of the parade and brought the parade to a halt. And a major part of their demands was like, to take the police out of the parade, because historically the police in Toronto have been oppressive of people of color and trans people in the city. And it was interesting to see that reaction play out too, where like a lot of well-meaning, like well-intentioned kind of liberal folks were just offended by this demonstration and thought that somehow it was ill-advised.
And still are.
Yeah.
Like haven't got it yet.
Yeah. And I think that plays towards this Canadian exceptionalism that we're talking about, right? Yeah. And as long as we don't call this stuff out and we turn a blind eye to it and we let this stuff fester, it's just going to grow. And so I think that's the key thing that people need to recognize, that although you can say, I mean, even if you believe that these are exceptions, not the rule, although I hope that after all these examples that we've shown that there's clearly a problem in Canada, even if there are few incidences, as long as we turn a blind eye to them, as long as we don't give them the coverage they deserve about how horrific they are, they're only going to grow in this country as long as they remain unchecked. And so that's essentially why we wanted to have this conversation. So I don't know, guys. where we at here.
I don't really know where to go from there. Obviously, it's pretty pretty
serious. Is there anything else we wanted to touch upon?
It's a pretty serious subject matter, obviously.
And
it's just been interesting to process all this at the same time, with that sort of the Maasai incident being kind of opening us up to the discussion, and then the experience of genuinely enjoying every minute of the parade. But just like, I remember sharing an article, one of the ones we've discussed, I can't remember which one. And it was a couple weeks probably after the incident, maybe even a couple weeks after the parade, like things had kind of settled and people had started to move on. And I just shared the article reminding people not to like let the joyful celebration like obscure, and like all this talk about multiculturalism, how proud we are as Canadians of the Raptors and the people involved in making the Raptors the thing, and the fan base, the more diverse fans, which is objectively true. Like the Raptors have a much more diverse fan base. Not to let all of that like obscure the profound problem of like, I guess the article was focused on anti-Black racism. And I remember sharing that article, and somebody who certainly would generally agree with our discussion, nonetheless felt like, you know, it wasn't the time or the place to bring us all down with this like reality check about problems that we face in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's something about the way maybe the conversation started about loving this team, loving this city. And like, you can't say the things that we've been saying without, oh, I mean, you can, but like, we're saying right. It because we love this place and want it to be better.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Like that's,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. At the root of any of the, I live in Jacksonville, so I do see the situation in the US. But anybody that I know that's like putting time and effort into struggling for police accountability, like real police accountability, where there's actually like civilian oversight and not just these body cams that get mysteriously switched off. Anybody that I know that's involved in that work, like, is ultimately animated by like a love for people, for their community. And that animation is, yeah, it points towards like a need for justice now. And so, yeah, of course we're doing the same thing. Like, I think, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not mutually exclusive, obviously, for us.
No, but I think it's good to push back against that, because that's always the go-to, yeah, of like, oh, you just hate this place.
Well, yeah, why go live somewhere else. Leave? Yeah.
You know, I mean, this gets said mostly not to people like settlers, yeah, like you and I, whose family have been here for a few generations. You know, they don't usually tell us to go back to, I don't know, Scotland,
yeah, Ireland, or whatever. Yeah.
Slovakia for me. But that's we have to push back against that sort of, that also knee-jerk reaction to say, oh, it's because you don't truly belong here or whatever. And that's people,
I mean,
trying to carve out their own space that we are challenging. so
yeah, I mean, that kind of reaction to me in my mind is equal to the Trump rallies where they're chanting send her back to Ilhan Omar and the congresswomen who are just pointing out criticisms within their own country. It's one in the same. It's a very reactionary and dangerous way to think, and we should call that out for what it is.
And obviously conservatives whine all the time, yeah, about, yeah, their country. So, like,
right. Yeah, right, right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. We're doing this out of our love for Toronto and for Canada, and our love for this community and the community that we live in, the people that we share this beautiful city and country with. And yeah, we're calling out some important issues, all spawned from that incident with Maasai after the Raptors won the fucking title. And that bullshit deputy sheriff, whatever the fuck he was, who fucking prevented our MVP from celebrating with his team. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Go Raptors. Go Maasai. Never leave us, Maasai. You are amazing. I think that's it.
you guys have some time this summer to like be out in public, maybe not in Toronto, and be a Raptors fan?
Be like, yeah, yeah,
that's my team.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's hear a story.
Oh,
I got it.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay, yeah, okay. You have a story?
Yeah, I mean, the fun thing about my why I wasn't able to record being out west, mostly staying in Vancouver. I mean, it was so funny when Danny Green showed up in town and forgot to lock his car.
Oh, no.
And had his laptop stolen. And like,
oh, no.
Because I don't know. Maybe he bought the myth of Canadian exceptionalism so much that he didn't think like poverty or like
there's no theft. No theft. Yeah.
And like he was in an area where you lock your car if you don't want. I mean, and you just don't leave a laptop.
Right. I mean, just about anywhere.
Just about anywhere.
Yeah.
But in the backseat.
A bit foolish. Like,
straight, I mean. but so I went down to Portland for a little trip as well. And my wife's sister's boyfriend wanted us to get him a jersey while we were down there at a vintage shop.
A Portland jersey? Or what are we talking
about? No. Just anything.
Oh.
He's, you know,
some
sort of basketball jersey. but he's a little bit particular, but didn't. He wasn't our
responsibility. So he wanted a jersey, but he didn't have a team?
He maybe did. I don't know.
So he's a poser, but, is what you're saying.
Okay. Yeah. This is a Toronto. That doesn't sound. He doesn't sound very particular.
All right, I'm joking. All right, continue. Yeah.
All I'm saying is, I didn't have the details, so I wasn't looking for him to help in the purchase.
Okay.
But
but
I was there at the vintage shop, and there's this kid, like 7 years old, going in to buy a jersey with his dad, and he's picking out a Golden State one. And I'm like, and I don't interrupt strangers doing things, especially the purchases. But it's like, bud, don't you want this Raptors jersey right here?
Yeah.
Since they are the champs.
Yeah.
And so I had my little time to just be like, yes, Toronto. And the kid was like, but whatever. He likes his shooters.
Wait, what? So he still bought the jersey?
He still bought the jersey, unfortunately. Actually, no, he didn't. It's on the list for his birthday or something. The dad wasn't ready to pull the trigger on it because these were vintage jerseys, but still like at least $60. Like, not cheap.
Well, I don't know. This kid sounds like a loser.